Shalom Havarim. Hello, friends. It is good to be with you on this Super Bowl Sunday. Kadri and I will give you $5 right now if you can tell me who's playing. Oh, shoot. Make sure you give 10% of that to the church. All right. Nope, that's the last time. My dad used to tell me, it's not a mistake if you learn from it. And I've learned so many things. Okay, happy Super Bowl Sunday. Obviously, Kadrin knows who is playing. There was a young man once who, he called into a radio show, and he actually won a single Super Bowl ticket a few years back. And he was very excited to go to the Super Bowl until he got there. So he went to the Super Bowl, and he found out that his ticket, got him in the front door, but his seat was way up in the rafters. And the Super Bowl that year was in Texas, just like it is this year. So not only did he have to climb to the upper levels, he sat behind some guy with a great big hat. He could not see what was going on. It was very disappointing for someone who was so excited to go to the Super Bowl. So rather than watching the field because he couldn't see it, he started looking around to see if there were any open seats. He wanted to see if he could move down a little closer to the field. And after he looked for a while, he sure enough did find a seat that was open. So when the security guards were not looking, he went down to that open seat. And when he got there, he saw a little old man sitting in a seat right next to the empty seat. And he went to the old man. He said, "I'm sorry, sir, excuse me, but is this seat available?" The man said, "Yes, I'm afraid it is. You see, for the last 40-some years, my wife and I have gone to each and every Super Bowl together. We together have watched every Super Bowl that ever was. And unfortunately, she recently passed away." So the young man looked at that man. He said, "I'm so sorry about your loss, sir. But didn't you have any friends? Didn't you have any family that you could invite to come with you to this game? You have this ticket available. Couldn't you have invited some friends?" He said, "Oh, surely I could have. I invited many friends and many family members, but they went to the funeral." I heard someone say amen. So we are in the second week of a 5-week sermon series on the Sermon on the Mount, specifically on the Beatitudes. Last week we opened asking the question, well, what does it mean to be blessed? And what does it mean to bless those who are poor in spirit? And I told you how I like the interpretation given by Friedrich Buchner, who says, "Blessed simply means that God is on your side. God is with you. God is guiding you. When you are down and out, God is there with you." And this week I stumbled across Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the Beatitudes. You know, Eugene Peterson wrote The Message. You're familiar with The Message? So The Message is a paraphrase. It's not a word-for-word translation. The NIV, the KJV, the NRSV, the HIJK, LMNOP, these are these are your tradition. I'm weird today. I'm sorry. I'm a little wired. Okay. These are traditional translations that take a word from the Greek or the Hebrew and they find the English equivalent to that word and try to convey a message. A paraphrase like the Message takes the general idea and concept and tries to adapt that to our modern language. And this is helpful because the Bible is full of things like idioms. Things like phrases that don't necessarily translate equally from one language to another. For instance, it's common today if I see you, I might say, "What's up, Leah?" And you would say, "Not much." Okay. Take that simple phrase and go back to Jesus' day. And you go to the Apostle Paul, you say, "What's up, Paul?" And Paul's like, "The moon? Like the sun? The stars?" You know, then literally he would assume that you meant, "What is up?" My high school physics teacher, whenever someone would say, "What's up, Mr. Mast?" he would always answer by saying, "The opposite of the force of gravity." because you got to love physics teachers, right? The opposite of the force of gravity. But no, that's an idiom. It's a phrase. It means something different than what it actually literally means. It's my way of saying, how are you doing? So I like the way Eugene Peterson paraphrases some of the passages from the New Testament. I like the way he paraphrased last week's beatitude. I'm going to share that with you this morning. Vroom, because that's fun to do. Let's do it again. Vroom. Eugene Peterson says this: you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and His rule. Can I get an amen? All right. So last week we preached about this beatitude, and a lot of you are just kind of, all right, kind of indifferent to that message. Kate didn't even mention, why are you all so sad, when she got up after the sermon and started the sharing time? And I think that the reason some of you didn't have the emotional response to that is that most of us aren't poor in spirit. Most of us aren't at the end of our ropes. You know, my rope is a little bit frayed from time to time, but I'm not at the end of it. I'm not hanging on by a thread. I couldn't connect with that one. I guess maybe many of you couldn't either. But today's beatitudes, these two that we're going to address today, I can connect. I understand, because this hits home for me. We're going to start with verse 4 today. Verse 4 simply says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be You see, this is real for me, because it was just a few weeks ago that we said goodbye to my grandfather. The only grandfather I can remember. My maternal grandfather passed away when I was about Hadley's age. This is the only grandfather that I remember. Both grandmothers passed away. My maternal grandmother died whenever I was just out of high school, so I barely remember. Okay, I'm not that old. But my adult life, this is the only grandparent that I had. This picture was taken on December 27th. It was 4 weeks ago yesterday that we buried my grandfather. We stood beside that open casket. We stood beside that frozen ground with the open dirt there before us. And we said those words, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, as we stood there shivering in the single-digit temperatures in rural Ohio. We looked around and we saw friends and family members, and we saw the way people were weeping and mourning. Now, you see, as a pastor, part of my job is to help you mourn well. Whenever you have family members who are sick, I go with you to the hospital. As people are dying, we often have services, a way to help the process of mourning take place. I go with you to the funeral homes, and we plan the services, and I conduct the services, and we have our prayers, and we have our time of celebrating their lives and saying goodbye and offering hope to you. And you know what? In this process, I've done it maybe not as many times as some people, but I've done it many, many times. And in many ways, you become hardened to it. And you have to become hardened to it. You have to become somewhat inured to the suffering and the pain, because if I'm, you've seen me break down and cry whenever I'm reading something that I've known I'm going to say it. I know I wrote the stuff, and I break down and cry very easily. You have to become hardened, or else you're just going to be a blubbering mess. I have to be hardened to it, or else I'm just a mess. And that's no help for those people who are trying to remember their parent, to have a celebration of life. You become hardened whenever you're in my line of work to the suffering around you. Are you familiar with this phrase, whistling past the graveyard? This is an idiom that's maybe a little old, a little gone. Are you familiar with it? It's simply a phrase that refers to someone who goes about their normal life, doing what they normally do, totally oblivious to the suffering around them. I hope that's not me. As we were saying goodbye to my grandfather, I saw my family weeping. I saw them crying. And then, yes, I shed some tears as well. But my older brother, who is the tough guy in the family, he's the tough, grizzled one. He's there weeping openly. And he reaches out his hand and holds the hand of my little brother during the funeral and just cries. And I mourn for the fact that I could not mourn in the way that they did, because it's not a switch you can turn on and off. It is my prayer that in those moments when people we love have passed on, that you know what it means to mourn, because blessed are you when you mourn. Why? Because you will be comforted. But you see, mourning is more than just remembering someone who has gone on. It's more than just saying goodbye to someone who has died. Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, but it's not just mourning deaths. It's mourning missed opportunities. You know, people, surely you're saying to yourself from time to time, if only I had applied to that job, maybe I wouldn't still be stuck in the position that I'm in. And you mourn the loss of an opportunity. Many of us, you know, we mourn the loss of our youthfulness. How many of you said, you know, back in my day, I could throw a pigskin over those mountains. You know, back in my day, I could do that. You should have seen me back in those days. I was slim. I was handsome. I could run a quarter mile in some time. Probably, I could run a quarter mile. Back in those days, we mourn the loss of our youthfulness. We mourn tragic experiences. We mourn things that happen even in places that we've never heard of before. We mourn the tragedies in Aleppo. We mourn hurricanes and earthquakes. We mourn the loss of life of people that we've never even met. We mourn illness. When people who we expect to be in good health are no longer in good health. When people get those diagnoses and they find out it's not good news, we mourn. We mourn suffering. We mourn pain. Now, the thing we need to remember is that Jesus' first audience was obviously Jewish. He was talking to Jewish men and women, his first disciples. They were all Jewish people. When he went up to that mountain and began to preach and give these beatitudes, he was talking to people that were very well versed in the Hebrew Bible. Now, the Hebrew Bible talks about another kind of mourning. It is the mourning of the loss of their way of life. So it was very helpful for me to work on this sermon with a number of commentaries open, because I didn't realize how many times Jesus draws from the Hebrew Bible in writing his Beatitudes. You know, he never cites his sources, though. It's like, Jesus, can I have a footnote or something here? Come on now. He's always quoting from the Psalms, and he's quoting from the prophets. He's quoting from various Hebrew literature. And when he talks about mourning, he seems to be drawing upon a Hebrew experience. And specifically, I'm thinking of the Babylonian exile. Remember the Babylonian exile? The Babylonians came into the promised land, the land that God had given to these Israelites. And the Babylonians, they took over this land. And they not only just like took the land, they took the people out into the country. They spread them out in this exile. And it's a really good way to keep them from rising up and attacking back and taking their land back. But the people, they were separated from their temple, from their family, and from their home. And we find in places like Psalm 137, verses 1 through 4, this little reminder of the suffering of the Israelites. By the rivers of Babylon, we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. Remember, Zion is a reference to Jerusalem. There on the poplars, we hung our harps, for there our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, sing us one of those songs of Zion. How can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? They are mourning the loss of their way of life, mourning the loss of their religious system. I'm going to quote a longer passage here as well. This one from Isaiah 61, verses 1 through 4. This one's going to sound really familiar to you. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has appointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from the darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Sounds like blessings, right? And the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of His splendor. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations. This is the text that Jesus quotes in His first public sermon. And He relates to the people who are mourning the loss of a way of life, mourning the loss of the promised land. So mourning, it's not just about losing a loved one. Yes, it is that, but it's more. For those who have lost opportunities, who have failed to get that promotion, who have failed to move forward in their career and are mourning those losses, God offers you blessings. When the people from the Babylonian captivity were released, we find this in Isaiah 41, these words made popular by Handel's Messiah. God offers comfort. Comfort ye my people. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. When we mourn, God seeks to provide comfort. So when you mourn the loss of a job, God will be with you on your side, offering words of comfort. When you mourn the loss of a future, maybe a child grows up and they make some decisions that you didn't expect them to make and you didn't want them to make, you would rather they do something else. You're mourning these losses. God is there speaking words of comfort. Maybe you got that bad report from the doctor, the thing that you didn't want to hear. Well, guess what? God is there in your mourning speaking words of comfort. Maybe you lost your home in the financial crisis of 2008. Guess what? God is there speaking words of comfort. Maybe you are cheering for the New England Patriots today, and in a few hours you will find out that your team did terribly in the Super Bowl. You're listening. God will be there speaking words of comfort. So we get this one. We understand this, right? You can connect with this one, right? Good, we got another beatitude to address this morning. And this one, I don't know what to do with this. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Okay, first of all, you ever do this where you just say a word over and over in your head and it just starts to sound really strange? Like, meek, meek, meek. Okay, do it sometime. Now you're going to go home. Meek, meek, meek. And it just gets really weird. And when I think of meek, you know what I think of? I think of Beaker. Now, if you don't know Beaker, Beaker is one of the Muppets, and he seems to be able to say one word, and that word is meep. Now, it's not meek, but it's meep. It's really close. And if you have some free time, don't do it now, do a little search online. Beaker does a wonderful rendition of Ode to Joy with nothing but meeps. Meep, 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 meep. And he does it in harmony. It's beautiful. Okay, so not meep, but meek. And this alone is really a weird word. What does that even mean? And I think this is one of the words that's easier to understand its antonym than to understand the actual word. So what does it mean to be the opposite of meek? Well, it means to be dominating. It means to be powerful, to enforce your will upon others against their will. And I heard a pastor say recently that to be meek is the opposite of being an angry alpha male. You've heard that term, angry alpha male, a person who always dominates the conversation, the physical activities, the way things are going to go. They're the ones that choose the restaurant that you're going to eat at. They're the ones that choose the colors at your wedding. They're the ones that choose all these things. They dominate everything. And when I think of angry alpha males, and yes, there are angry alpha females too, let's be honest, but there tends to be more angry alpha males. When I think of angry alpha males, I go back to junior high, and I think of a guy named Mike. Every school has a Mike. Mike is the guy who hits puberty before everybody else. I'm still going to school with my little Hello Kitty backpack, wearing my Incredible Hulk t-shirts and stuff like that. I'm just this little teenager going into school, and there's Mike, and Mike is like, he's shaving by the time before he's a teenager, he's shaving. We had this rumor was going around that Mike actually during lunch break would go to the locker room and shave just so he didn't have a 5 o'clock shadow by study hall. Mike was that guy who just physically matured so much more quickly than everyone else. If he didn't wear that Led Zeppelin t-shirt every day, we would assume he was one of the teachers in the school, right? So this is Mike. Now, Mike didn't do really well in most of our classes, but there is one class that he excelled in, gym class. Mike ruled the roost in gym class. If you played dodgeball in gym, you wanted to be on Mike's side, or else you had Spalding on the side of your face at the end of the day. Mike was the guy, not only did he rule gym class, he ruled the locker room. So that was his domain. If you went into the locker room after gym class, Mike could be found, you know, asking people if they wanted to wrestle, asking people if they could compete with him and see who could do the most chin-ups or push-ups. Mike was always inviting people to arm wrestle. Mike sometimes asked people if they wanted to take a swing at him. And if you didn't compete with Mike, he would call you various names. He would call you women's names like Nancy or Helen or a sissy. Why do you laugh at Helen? What are you laughing at, Helen? Nancy was their pig. Which also wouldn't be a good nickname for a person, okay? Sorry. Mike would call us these names because he had the physical power. No one was going to mess with Mike. He physically matured faster. He was the alpha male. He ruled the locker room. As people got older, you know, the alpha males, they continued to dominate. It wasn't just the locker room. Then when we became adults, it was the board room. When people went into the workplace, it is the alpha males who rule the roost in the board room. If they want their way, they say, you better pass this motion because this is the way it's going to be. If you don't, I will make your life a living heck or something like that. Alpha males are really, really using dirty language there. I will make your life a living heck. These are the guys that get their way through intimidation and force. But it's not just the locker room. It's not just the boardroom. It is the war room. Because if you look at the world leaders today, most of them I would describe as alpha males. Bashar al-Assad, Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un. These are people who rule by domination, force, and fear, intimidation. So what does it mean to be meek? It is the opposite of that. And the word we translate as meek, I know you've been waiting for your Greek lesson for today. The word we translate as meek is praus. Two syllables. Say it with me. Praus. Praus simply means mildness of disposition or gentleness. When you think of Bashar al-Assad, you think, what a gentle individual, right? No. Mildness of disposition, gentleness. This is a word that's used to describe Jesus when he comes into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey. He is praus, riding on the back of a donkey. Another occurrence of this word, we find it in Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23. This is a section we know as the fruit of the Spirit. Please read this with me. Let's read it slow and deliberately. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. Which one of those words do you think is praus? It is the word gentleness. Blessed are those who are gentle. Now, notice this is not the same thing as being weak. I know weak and meek, they sound alike, but it's not the same. Is Jesus weak? No. He is powerful, but it's power under control. It is power that he is able to harness. There's actually a story that the Greek army had this team of horses, these war horses. What a wonderful illustration for a Mennonite to use. These war horses, they were big and powerful beasts. But they described their horses as being praus because they were power under control. You can't have some wild beast running around in the middle of a battlefield. No, no. These had to be highly trained. They had to be disciplined creatures. To be meek doesn't mean you have no power at all. It means you choose not to use power of intimidation, the power of force, to dominate other people. Blessed are the wild stallions who have learned to control their power, for they shall inherit the earth. Eugene Peterson, you got nothing on me when it comes to paraphrases. Come on now. Well, let's go back to that one more time. For they shall inherit what? What do the meek get? Come on now. Wait, come on. We slow down. Whoa, Nancy. When you think about inheriting something, I mean, I just came through this experience losing my grandfather. You start dividing things up, right? When someone dies, you know, I've been eyeing that cuckoo clock for a while, Grandpa. You start dividing it up. You know, my brother Chad, you get Grandpa's car. And my brother Brian, you can have the house. And Kevin, what do you get? The earth. Come on now. This is what you get. For they shall inherit the earth. That's how the NIV translates this passage. Well, I think a better way to look at it, because they had no concept of the earth in the first century. They saw this land. It was kind of out there in the middle of the ocean. There was the edge of the world. You fall off it. They didn't think of a big round globe out there floating. They thought instead when they used the word earth, it's more like the soil. So another way to translate this passage is to say they will inherit the land. So let me go back to something I said earlier. Who was Jesus speaking to? Who was his first audience? What religion were they? Jewish people. So when a Jew heard, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the land," what do you think came to their mind? The promised land. Now at this time, the Romans had occupied the promised land. They came in with their war horses and their powerful army. A bunch of alpha males led them into battle. They took the promised land from the Jewish people and they called it their own. It was now a part of the Roman Empire. This is all a part of the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. Let me dominate your culture, dominate your people, and there will be peace. But this isn't the first time that this land had transferred ownership, you know? Think about how land was transferred back in those days. Obviously, these two parties, they would sit down and they would reach a mutually agreed upon fair settlement price for the land, right? They go to a real estate agent and they find a lawyer and they write up some paperwork. And then they close on a loan and they celebrate with milk and honey because this place is flowing with it. No. Generation after generation, the land is passed because of war. Alpha males coming in and dominating, taking the land from other people. Even the way the Israelites acquired this land was through violence, through war. But now Jesus is saying, blessed are the meek. Those who may be powerful but choose not to use power over people, for they shall inherit the promised land. Now again, this is a reference we find in the Psalms. Psalm 37, 10 through 11 says this, "A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity." This doesn't make sense, my friends. That's not the way the world works. It is the powerful, the alpha males. Again, they rule the locker room, the boardroom, the war room. They are the ones who dominate. But Jesus says, no, blessed are the meek. For they shall inherit the earth. They shall inherit the land. And in Revelation 21, we find this image that God gives to John the Revelator, where the heavens descend upon the earth, and the earth and the heavens, they become one. They call this the new heaven and the new earth. Now, John could have used any number of words to describe that new creation, the new heaven and new earth. But the word that he uses for earth there is a strange and lesser used one. He doesn't use cosmos like John uses in John 3:16, for God so loved the world. No, he uses this strange little two-letter word that I'm not even going to try to pronounce for you. It's like a G and an N put together. It's like, gng. I said I wasn't going to try to pronounce it. I'm a liar. Gng. This is the new heaven and the new goon. Well, guess what? That's the same word that Jesus used in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the new heaven and the new promised land. My friends, power is something that we chase after. Power is something we want. We want to be able to dominate. You know, I remember being in middle school. I wanted to be Mike. Like Mike. I wanted to be like Mike. I want to be like Mike. Is that totally lost? Okay. Nike commercial with Michael Jordan. Anyway, I wanted to be like Mike. And when I started my career and out of high school, I wanted to be that powerful person in the boardroom. And I know people aspire to be like these powerful world leaders. But guess what? Any power they have, that does not transfer into the new heaven and the new earth. Those things, we're told in Psalm 37, will wither and die. It is the meek who shall inherit the earth. Let's pray. Loving God, thank you. Thank you for the challenge to realize that while might and power does seem to dominate here on earth, that is only temporary. Lord, help us to be meek. Help us to be like Jesus. Help us to be those who are willing to control our power, to not force ourselves or force our opinions or force our beliefs upon others, but instead to be humble like you, like the one who rode into town on a donkey, like the one who gave his life for us. May it be so. Amen.